often say that the six-month-old phase is the easiest and cutest one, just before they get moving and become a danger to themselves. Well, today we explore a little six-month-old who is laughing at his sibling, grabbing at everything in sight, and is far more interested in the world than staying long enough on the breast to drink his milk. We are, of course, sitting down with our regular mum, Nina, as we unpack little Josh's beautiful social butterfly personality and the very real challenges that come with it. So what are three things that you're going to learn about today? First of all, why distracted feeding at six-month-olds is actually normal and how you can actually deal with that. Secondly, if you're introducing solids, how do you build your baby's gut microbiome for long-term health? So we break down the science on live cultures, flavor variety, and the crucial allergy prevention window. And then we look at baby-led weaning without fear. So how do you combine baby-led and parent-led feeding? And how do you understand the differences between choking and gagging and safe ways to support their exploration? Plus, we're going to be covering off practical activities to help your almost crawler build strength and confidence and coordination. So if you're navigating the transition from milk to solids, this episode will leave you calm and confident and clear on what matters most. So do listen in now. And if this episode helps you, please subscribe, leave a review, and share it with another parent who needs reassurance today.
Welcome to Sense by Meg Forer, the podcast that's brought to you by ParentSense, the app that takes guesswork out of parenting. If you're a new parent, then you are in good company. Your host, Meg Forer, is a well-known OT, infant specialist, and the author of 8 parenting books. Each week, we're going to spend time with new mums and dads just like you to chat about the week's wins, the challenges, and the questions of the moment. Subscribe to the podcast, download the ParentSense app, and catch Makia every week to make the most of that first year of your little one's life. And now, meet your host.
Welcome back, mums and dads. Today we have one of our wonderful regular guests, Nina, with us, and we have been tracking Nina's journey with little Josh for 6 months. I cannot believe it, Nina, but you have a six-month-old.
Mm-hmm. Time flies when they're tiny, that is for sure.
It really does. You feel like it's going to last forever when you're going through the sleepless nights, and then before you know it, you blink and they're going to be walking and talking. So it goes quickly.
That's it. Oh, it's terrifying to think, but yeah.
Yeah, amazing. So tell us a little bit about the highs of a six-month-old. Let's start there. What is the good stuff that you're seeing? What is the really cute stuff that warms your heart?
Oh, Meg, all of it is really cute at the moment. I must say, obviously, but very biased, but he is just, I think I have said this in a couple of podcasts before, but he is just such a delight at the moment. He is laughing at everything his big brother does, just thinks he is the funniest thing since sliced bread. Chats, there's loads of blowing of bubbles in the morning, just for like hours on end, he'll just... he is so keen to pull himself up against any surface, and he just wants everything in his hands and in his mouth. So I'm just loving like the exploration of all the things. It's definitely proving quite labor intensive as a parent, or the person who needs to, you know, keep the things at arm's reach for him all the time, and to make sure that he obviously doesn't pull at things that are dangerous. But it is lovely to see just what fascinates the little kid. In terms of sleep, I almost just, you know, didn't even want to talk about it today, because I feel like last time we chatted, and it was actually a couple of weeks ago, so, you know, lots has changed since then, but he was on like quite a good footing when it came to sleep. Then I don't know if it's a regression, I don't know what happened. I think it was, and I'd love for us to touch on that a little bit later, I think it was actually the introduction of solids, which was maybe, you know, upsetting the tummy a little bit. We were maybe giving him his feed a little bit too late in the day, and that was too close to bedtime. And then that tummy was really struggling to digest when he actually had to go down. But he went through another, I would say, 2 or 3 weeks of really patchy sleep. But we seem to be through that now. And so I'm enjoying him even more because I'm better rested.
Makes such a difference. So going back to his development and his little personality, I think we've spoken about it a few times. I think he is a social butterfly, isn't he?
Oh, I absolutely think he's a social butterfly. I mean, this kid just tracks every single person who comes past. If there's a smile that's given to him, he will throw it right back at you. He is quite a difficult kid to feed as well in terms of breastfeeding, especially because, and even actually bottle. So it just feels like he doesn't want to be contained to have to feed, which worries me because he's such a big kid. He's over 10 kgs now. So he really needs it. But still, to this day, it is like I have to be in a dark room. He has to be like quite calm, no distractions around. Otherwise, you know, we just want out there like getting involved. So yeah, for sure.
He feels very similar to my firstborn, my James, who is also a social butterfly. And we actually, between 4 and 6 months of age, breastfeeding became increasingly difficult until eventually I actually just transitioned him off the breast at 6 months because I couldn't feed him anymore. He would kind of want to snack for like 30 seconds and then everything else was too interesting. So he would be like literally holding onto my nipple and turning his head the other way. So it was painful. It was very, very difficult. You know, I think luckily milk becomes increasingly less important now, even if he's a big baby. So, you know, at 6 months old, just 4 feeds a day is enough. So if he's having a good feed when he wakes up, rested in the morning, and a good feed just before bedtime, then the other two around mid-morning and mid-afternoon is actually enough milk. And, you know, and then it gets even easier. By 9 months, it's only 3 times a day and only one of those is in a wakeful patch. The other two, early morning, late evening. And then by a year, you're down to just 2 feeds. So, you know, for moms who are going through this, if you are intent on continuing with breastfeeding, then, you know, just, you know, kind of just bear with it because the reliance on milk is going down and you can get them through to a year. I know I did stop at 6 months, but I probably, if I'd pushed on, could have got him to a year. But I did find with James, I eventually had to transition him onto bottles. And even then, he didn't really want to take them because milk is so bland and it's so boring that he actually started to wean himself off milk in entirety much earlier than my girls did. And that's, you know, and that's one of the things that we often say to moms of social butterflies is if they're under 6 months, you've got to be super careful with protecting their milk appetite because milk is a real priority for growth and development before 6 months. But from 6 months onwards, you can actually become a lot more relaxed with your social butterfly. And as long as they're getting, because they'll actually prefer to take their nutrition in through solids because solids are much more interesting. They've got texture, they've got flavor, they've got color. They're just more varied. So they will actually start to, you know, cup their entire appetite on solids and then wean themselves largely off milk. So if he is one of those who's going to be an early weaner, it isn't the end of the world. Just make sure that you have got a milk or milk replacement foods in the solids. So that would be a smoothie with oat milk or milk. You know, if he's on dairy, then having him on things like yogurt and cheese, and you can actually fill up that space with solids because the reality is, sometimes we try and swim upstream with the milk, but it's actually not worth it. We can actually just move them onto solids at this point, you know, and the milk becomes secondary, which you might find easier than fighting it.
Yeah, no, 100%. Sure. Those figures are actually incredibly comforting for me. I didn't realize it was so little. I guess, A, you forget about it with, you know, a couple of years down the line because it felt like it was way more with Max. But maybe again, I think he's also a little bit of a social butterfly. And so there was more feeds more often, but maybe they were more snacks than full feeds at the end of the day. So they're probably getting the same amount in, but it's sort of every 2 hours whenever I can sneak a little boob in there, or before a nap or after a nap or something like that, just to, yeah, try and get it in when they're a little bit more calm. But that's great. Yeah.
Yeah, you definitely can go down that road, but I do think taking the pressure off yourself and off him of having to get that milk in might just be a little easier for you. What's interesting is that for moms who are listening who've got slow to warm up babies, they tend to not like the solids. So they are the ones who stick to milk diets for much longer. And so they have more milk and actually would prefer not to have the solids because they don't like the surprise of texture, flavor, and so on. So, you know, it points out to us just how variable each of our parenting journeys are and that there isn't a single approach for all babies, you know, and as long as they are taking good nutrition and gaining weight, which he clearly is, then, you know, you really don't need to sweat the like target amount of milk that you think he needs to have.
Yeah, amazing. Okay, whew. Well, that takes the pressure off for sure. Meg, while we're on the solids, I would actually just love to chat to you a little bit about that today because obviously, you know, you speak to different people, you go for a quick weigh in or a vaccination here or there, and there's a nurse that you ask about it, XYZ. And so there's obviously varying bits of input on everything, including solids. And I think what I mentioned earlier about sort of having wondered whether having introduced the solids, obviously a lot of people say, oh, if you introduce that and they are big babies and they're hungry, that's maybe going to lead to better night's sleep because they're fuller and all of that. But then the other side of the coin is maybe their digestive systems are obviously still warming up to the fact that they are needed to solids and all of these new different textures and foods and all the rest. So it might actually impede their sleep because of that fact. So first of all, I just wanted to, I guess, chat to you about sort of what the correct intake is for babies of this age, bearing in mind that, I mean, he's now 6.5 months old, but he has been doing a bit of solids, I would say, for the past month already, where in the beginning, the first couple of weeks, it was just, or the first couple of days, it was really just a little bit here and there. And I would say for Joshy especially, it feels like he takes it as a very social activity. So he loves to eat with us, and he loves to, I mean, he'll grab everything obviously that we want or that we eat, and he wants to get involved in all of those foods. So maybe just a little bit of direction in that. And specifically, you mentioned earlier about the yogurt and some of the other milk alternatives. What one person said to me a couple of days ago was maybe steer clear of the yogurt for the first couple of weeks or even months. Maybe start at 8 or 9 months with that, because the live cultures is maybe just a little bit too much to handle for babies right at the start. So I'd love to just get, if you have like a rough sort of framework on what's right when it comes to this.
Yeah, so you've brought up some really interesting things. First of all, around the live cultures, you know, your gut microbiome is increasingly, we're understanding, is just the most important thing that we really do have to develop properly for our little ones early on. I mean, I didn't realize until I really started to research this, and I think the research is very new on it, that the newborn, the neonate, in the first couple of days, their gut microbiome is very, very sparse. Like, there's not a lot of variety in the microbes. There might be a little bit of seeding that happens if they're through natural deliveries. And then obviously because there's, you know, they move down past the area near your colon, which means that they actually, there's a little bit of your gut microbiome that transfers to them in the birth process. In addition to that, obviously your oligosaccharides, which are your milk sugars in breast milk, are just phenomenal, as is colostrum for the gut microbiome. So they start to see their gut microbiome pretty early on. And we are aiming to have very varied and very rich gut microbiomes very early on. There is definitely, as far as I've ever read, and I'm absolutely certain I could, you know, hang my hat on this, having a varied gut microbiome is an advantage rather than something that would disrupt sleep. So I definitely would not say try to keep his gut microbiome bland in any way. We just know that all future health is based on a healthy flora in your gut. So I don't agree with that. The other thing is, in terms of introducing solids, is that there's this window period, and this is the reason why we do recommend introducing solids from as early as 4 months, or for some babies as, you know, as late as 6 months, but to get it going then, because two things happen other than the gut microbiome. The one is that they really are open to new flavors until about 9 months. And then about 9 months, they become a little bit more like, I don't know if this is so much fun. So you want to get as much variety in as possible early on. And the more fibrous variety you get in, which is obviously from fruits and vegetables, the more varied their gut microbiome will be. So it is a real target for us to actually have variety and quite rapid introduction of solids. So back in the old days, and I count that as when I had my firstborn, that would be the old days, like 27 years ago, it was super bland, like, you know, rice cereal for the first 3 months type thing. And these poor social butterflies almost died of boredom. They would rather have almost had milk than the rice cereal eventually. So we don't do that anymore. We now say go in with fresh fruit and vegetables, go in with a lot of variety, and get that gut microbiome working and active very early on, and also prevent picky eating later on as well. So that is one rationale for rapid introduction. And then in the third one, so I've spoken about the gut microbiome, I've spoken about the picky eating window, and then the third one is the allergy window. And there is a time at which, if you delay solids very late, after 10 months of age, you actually have an increased risk of allergies to allergens. So you want little ones to have introduction and exposure very early on. In actual fact, that's one of the reasons why we say that moms who are not allergic to things in pregnancy should eat all those things in pregnancy. So if you're not allergic to peanuts, fish, and eggs, eat them in pregnancy because you're microdosing the fetus. Eat them when you're breastfeeding because you're microdosing through your breast milk. And as soon as you can start introducing allergens, and so those foods that have got those proteins in, do it. And so if you read the book Weaning Sense that I wrote with Kath McGaw, and if you look at the weaning at the Parent Sense app, you'll see that we start to introduce things like peanut and fish and egg and dairy and wheat very early on. And the reason for that is that by delaying exposure, there is conclusive evidence that now shows you have an increased risk of allergies. So the recommendation now, and this is globally, is that at 6.5 months, they should have really full exposure to all allergens. And that means your dairy allergens in the form of yogurt, cheeses, and so on. It should be wheat allergens. So in the form of, like a nice sourdough bread, you can home bake it. There's a lovely recipe in our book. Definitely fish, definitely chicken, definitely avocado, banana, and egg, obviously, as well. So you can now really focus on introducing variety and allergens. In terms of actually introducing the allergens, and in fact, before I tell you that, have you introduced him to any allergens yet of the ones I've listed?
Yes, I have. The only two, and I've made a mental note while you were speaking, that I haven't yet is fish and peanuts. So I just haven't actually gotten around to getting like a nice sort of whatever sugar-free, very healthy peanut butter. We've only got the bad stuff here. So I just need to get my hands on that. Yeah.
So that is, I would definitely do both fish and peanuts. And what you would do is you would introduce, being that you've introduced all the other allergens, you don't have to worry about them, but I would do a nut butter meal fairly soon. So breakfast, just mix in some nice, as you say, sugar and salt-free peanut butter into his oats or into whatever you're serving him for breakfast, or even just spread it on a lovely piece of sourdough bread for him to snack on. So get that nut butter in. And then also then once that's settled for about 3 or 4 days and you've done repeated introductions of that allergen, then you can go on to fish and do the fish as well. So I'm not saying that there's a wild rush because he's only been on solids for a month and he's only 6.5 months, but I would certainly prioritize that within the next month. And yeah, so in terms of guidelines, and you know, your first question was, what should he be eating across the course of a day? Your hero meal in babies and toddlers is always breakfast, because that's when they're most likely to eat the most and they're most likely to eat the least in the evening. You know, they eat very intuitively if we allow them to, which is they eat like kings for breakfast, princes for lunch, and paupers for supper. That's kind of what we expect. So because breakfast is a hero meal, you really do want that to have all the food groups, lots of fiber. So there you would have something like a lovely unprocessed carbohydrate like oats porridge is stunning. And then I would put in some dairy or other protein. So that could be either yogurt or nut butter. And then I would put in some fruit as well. So like some raspberries as an example. So that would be a really fabulous breakfast. You're getting in your fiber for your gut microbiome. There's obviously fiber in oats, which is also, oats is amazing. You do want to get organic oats. There are very few things that we are fastidious on, being organic oats is one of them. We do want organic oats, organic milk and dairy products, obviously, for the hormones. But that would be a good breakfast, a great breakfast. And then because he's 6.5 months old now, at that mid-morning bottle, I would prioritize the milk first, because he's such a picky feeder anyway. And he might do 30 seconds, 2 minutes, short, quick breastfeed. And then I would give him a snack. And so that would be like a piece of sourdough bread with some nut butter on, or some hummus with little steamed carrot sticks, or you can go in any direction, biltong sticks without salt. So lovely little snack. Then you would have your lunch, which would be very veggie laden, and preferably try and cook those yourself. I'm really, really not wild on the pre-cooked meals, because especially the ones that are in pouches, like those, you know, the squeezy pouches, because they're highly processed. You don't really know what's in them. And they're also very smooth. So they don't offer the opportunity for jaw development and so on. So you would give some nice veggies. And then you would give him a nice protein as well. So the veggies could include some sweet potato, some butternut, some gem squash, which are also lovely starches as well. And then some protein. And then again, mid-afternoon, treat the same as the morning. breastfeed and then a snack. And then in the evening, giving him something, if he's battling with sleep and it is disrupting him, it's more around the proteins than the gut microbiome that might be doing it. So you can give him a protein meal, but that maybe it's not too heavy. So maybe if you're giving him lamb, giving him in the middle of the day rather than, you know, close to bedtime. But what you'll find is that evening meal is sometimes hit and miss, that they don't really necessarily do it. They're tired and not that interested. Another thing that you mentioned that I just want to make a point on, because it's so fabulous, is that you mentioned that he's eating socially, and we expect that because he's a social butterfly, but actually that codes for really, really healthy eating long-term in life, because eating is supposed to be social. Babies do eat better when it's social, and actually quite quickly now you can move him onto baby-led weaning. So it might be that the evening meal is not so much about the mush anymore, but actually he's sitting at a table or a high chair with his brother, and he's having with Max, and he's having what Max is having as steamed things that he can actually hold. So if Max is having broccoli and a chicken drumstick and some sweet potato, don't mush it. Like, give it to him as whole food, well steamed on his plate, and he'll start to get quite a bit to his mouth. And then if you are a control freak mom, which I know that you're not, you know, I do have moms on my podcast with me who are a little bit more A-type than you are with regards to controlling things. But if you were, you could also mush all of that as well and kind of spoon feed at the same time as he's self-feeding. Either way is fine. And that's modified baby-led weaning.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty chilled with most things, but the feeding, especially when it comes to baby-led weaning, I can remember I wasn't great with that with Max either, because I think I was just really nervous about the safety side of things. And even now when I give him, you know, a little piece of, you know, baton of carrot or cucumber or whatever it is, I mean, the amount of times he then bites off with his tiny gums, because he has no teeth yet, pieces of cucumber that I'm just like, oh, this can't actually go down your throat. I mean,
Have you done the choking course on the Parent Sense app?
Well, not on the Parent Sense app. I have done an in-person one, and I actually did a refresher now recently when Josh came into the picture. So I've done it twice. It's still...
Yeah, I might just send you a link for it. And I'll tell you why. The woman who does it is amazing. She's a nurse in the UK. She's originally from Australia. And she really goes through how to tell the difference between choking and gagging. And I think that's where we often go wrong, because when that little piece of carrot or cucumber comes off, they kind of do that kind of gagging face, which is what sends our blood pressure through the roof. And now we're sweating because we think they're choking. But actually, gagging is an incredibly positive and functional response to a bit in your mouth. And the worst thing we can do is intervene either with an aghast look on our face, because it then tells them, whoa, eating is dangerous, and sticking our finger in their mouth to hook it out, because that's when the accidents happen and we actually shove it down their throat, because that gag reflex is so effective, it'll get it out. The only time to worry is when they're choking, which is a very different look to a gag. So a gag is they pink, they're making a noise, and I mean, those are the two things. They pink and they're making a noise. A choke is they're white or blue and they're making no noise. And so if he's making a noise like, you know, that sort of noise, he's gagging, and you can just let it be and just, you know, kind of just smile and wave while he gets it out. And don't worry too much. Obviously, you do want to, with baby-led weaning, you want to make sure things are very soft. So you should be able to crush it between your forefinger and your thumb, whatever he's eating. So potentially, he's maybe a little bit young then for the cucumber. I would watch him with that, and definitely no apple, and preferably, and obviously no nuts. I mean, nothing like that. But things like soggy bread is an example where they'll often gag on a piece of bread, but actually that's fine, because it's actually very soft. When you squeeze bread between saliva and with saliva in your fingers, it goes away to nothing.
Okay, perfect. And Meg, what is your view on baby-led versus parent-led weaning, and what's better?
This episode is brought to us by ParentSense, the all-in-one baby and parenting app that helps you make the most of your baby's first year. Don't you wish someone would just tell you everything you need to know about caring for your baby? When to feed them, how to wean them, and why they won't sleep? ParentSense app is like having a baby expert on your phone guiding you to parent with confidence. Get a flexible routine, daily tips, and advice personalized for you and your little one. Download ParentSense app now from your app store and take the guesswork out of parenting.
What is your view on baby-led versus parent-led weaning, and what's better?
It's a beautiful dance. That's what it is. And it is such a beautiful dance. And, you know, I think the dance, and in fact, we write it in our book that it's actually the dance with everything, whether it's getting your baby to sleep through the night, teaching them to potty train, later on teaching them to read. Everything in our journey as parents is transitioning them towards complete independence, which means that baby-led weaning holds real validity because you're handing the control over to your child. So I am a big fan of handing over the control to your little one. So I am a fan of baby-led weaning. I do think in the original format of baby-led weaning, which was in the early 2000s, it was very extreme and it was not very practical. So the original, and if you want to be a purist baby-led weaner, you don't introduce solids till about 7 months, because before that, they don't really have the dexterity to actually start to take in anything. So you have to have a very high reliance on a milk diet, and you've got to be prepared to do that. And it's not fabulous for the reasons I said earlier on, for the gut microbiome, for the pickiness, and for the allergies. So that's why I don't like the purest version, because it delays solids too late and it puts the entire onus on the child. The modified baby-led weaning, which is actually the new version of Weaning Sense, the 2024 version of Weaning Sense, we have a whole chapter on baby-led weaning in the book. And in that chapter, we go through how to transition, like how much control do you keep, how much do you hand over? But, you know, with every baby, it's going to be different. With your more gregarious social butterflies, he's actually probably going to baby-led wean much quicker, and you're going to hand over transition control much more quickly. So it is a dance, and there will be meals where you take back control because he's been sick and iffy and he doesn't want to handle food and he doesn't want to eat. And so you're going to have to make sure that, you know, that he is getting in some calories. And then there's going to be a lot of the meal times where you can just hand over control and let him enjoy his weaning journey. So I am a fan of baby-led weaning, but not the purest version. And again, you know, you spoke earlier on about all the contrasting and conflicting advice you get. I think it can be a real minefield with moms where, you know, people who do baby-led weaning become quite, vigilant about it. And then it's the only way to do it. And I don't think that's necessarily the right way.
Yeah. No, I think that is the difficulty of parenting nowadays, where we just have so much access to so many different experts, right? And their views and their way or the highway.
Yeah, for me, you always default to the science. So, you know, I've always picked very specific voices in the market. And actually, if you go through the ParentSense app, the people who we have on the app are people where I've really thought very carefully about the science that they're following, because there's some incredible science, but it needs to be led by people who are reading it, the science, not just reading the reports of the science from influencers, you know. So I think you do need to choose voices. And so, I mean, in terms of feeding, I don't think any voice is more wise than Kath McGaw. She's, you know, she's a dietitian who really follows the latest and speaks at all the conferences, attends every conference. And she changes her point of view, by the way, annually. I mean, you can't believe it's, you know, and that's because there's science that comes out annually, particularly in the area of nutrition, even adult nutrition, that tells us more about our bodies. And so, you know, we do need to change our opinion. We can't be stuck back in the 1990s.
Yeah, I actually just got her latest book, Mindful Meal. So I need to carve out some time to read that. That's going to be my bedtime reading this week. But yeah, so I think that probably is the latest take on.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And what's lovely about that book is she wrote it with Jenny Rose, and Jenny is a psychologist. And so they very much brought in the emotional aspect of feeding and eating. And it's just, I mean, increasingly, as you know, as science advances, we're understanding this link between emotions, gut microbiome, and food. It's like it's a three-way triangle. It's moving all the time. So mealtimes need to be happy, unpressurized, positive. Diets need to be full of fiber, high variety. And all of that codes for a very good cycle for long-term health in terms of diabetes, obesity, and mood as well. So it's a lovely book. I think you were at the launch of that, weren't you?
Oh, I was pulled out early because I took Josh with stupidly, and obviously a little baby does not want to sit through a book launch. What a surprise. Anyway, Meg, if we have a few minutes, I did just quickly want to ask you about crawling. Is there a bit of time?
It definitely is. Love crawling. It's my favorite, second favorite milestone to smiling.
Brilliant. Okay. So Josh is, it feels like, very much on the precipice of wanting to crawl. And I know this from experience that we obviously don't want to necessarily rush movement because it is going to just lead to absolute chaos. But, you know, I feel like he would like to. And so I just wanted to chat to you about potentially a few little tips and tricks or movements or exercises that you might suggest to just help the little guy out, because I think he is getting increasingly frustrated by being stagnant.
Yeah. So look, he's unlikely to crawl within the next month. Crawling typically happens between 8 and 10 months. But it is a very variable milestone, so it can happen earlier. The key thing to be doing at this stage is still to be giving him lots of tummy time. So I would say the two most important things, the one is, I don't know if you do have a bumbo seat or a seat positioner, but try not to use seat positioners too much, because they really don't work well for those tummy muscles that need to learn to work. And put him on the floor at every opportunity. So that would be the first principle that I would be working towards. And then there's some lovely little activities that you can do to help him learn to crawl. So I'll just give you a couple. So one is to sit on the floor with him with your legs kind of out in a V, and then have him over your shin with his arms on his tummy over your shin, with his arms in front of your shin and his legs behind, because that'll put him in a supported crawling position, and let him play from that position, because that helps to build up all that lovely strength in the shoulder girdle to support him, and then also to build up his little hips and so on. So that's quite a lovely one. Another one is to lay him down on the floor on a rolled up towel. So just take a towel, roll it in a long sausage, lay him onto the towel in the middle, and then you pick up each of the two ends and you almost like pull it up under his tummy to create like a little bit of a hammock. And then you can actually rock him in that position. Again, just activating those tummy muscles, activating that shoulder girdle, and getting him prepped for it. So those are two activities I would do other than just simple floor time. So you can do those. And then another really nice one is to put toys, when he's in a seated position, to put toys to his left and to his right. And what he will do is, if you put a toy a little bit out of reach to the side of him, he'll start to reach for it. And as he falls over towards it, he'll put down his hand that's on the same side as the toy. And then he'll be forced to bring the other hand while he's supporting himself over to grab the toy, because now he's going to, so he's crossing the midline across past the supporting arm towards the toy. And what that does, that is a very classic route to crawling that babies use to go from sitting into a crawling position. So it kind of starts to pattern the pieces of crawling. And before you know, one day, I mean, initially he'll reach over, then he'll flop onto his tummy. And then one day he'll go over and he'll actually go onto all fours and then flop onto his tummy. But you're giving him the sense of that movement. So that's a really nice one. And so putting the toys slightly out of reach is a good one. And then also, if he's lying on his tummy and he's desperate to get to a toy that's kind of half a meter in front of him, or to his brother or whatever, is to actually just give him a bit of support behind his feet, so he's got something to push against as he pushes to get his little pelvis up in the air to go forward. So those are all little activities. Inside the app, actually, we give an activity every day in the play section of the app, and some of them each week will be focused on getting him crawling at this stage, the ones in the app. But again, you know, I think you alluded to it, I'm not a fan of pushing babies too quickly. And also, like you say, he's going to get busy and then all hell breaks loose. But I would say you've got another month ahead of you of him doing all the preparatory things. And it takes a little bit of time before they get there. The only thing I would say to watch out for as a potential stumbling block to crawling is if you put him on his tummy and he immediately goes into the almost like the Superman position, arms off the floor and up, arching his back and feet out straight behind him so that he's almost like an upside down banana, that can indicate that our little ones don't have enough muscle tone around their chest and their tummy and enough flexion to go into the crawling position. And actually my second child, who was a little bit of a late developer, not terribly late, but later certainly than my first, at about 8 months, I could see that whenever she was on her tummy, she was in that banana. And so I just took her off for like 2 sessions of physio. They worked on flexion and then she got going with crawling. But that's the only real hindrance, other than obviously not giving your child tummy time.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he does sometimes do that, but then he can also go the other way where he pushes up on his arms. He's up for quite a long time. And what you mentioned, the first one that you mentioned about sort of sitting behind him and then letting him go over your leg, he actually now, it feels like, does that naturally just all the time. He just, you know, if there's anything next to my leg, he just chucks himself over it. And then he sort of just like hangs out over the leg. So at least that's natural. Isn't happening. So that's great. Okay, brilliant. Thank you.
That's perfect. And what that indicates to me, which I just love, Nina, is that you're on the floor with him. And I think, you know, when parents think, and they often ask me at this age, like, what are the best toys? What are the best stimulation activities? And actually, it's just you. Like, being on the floor with your little one is the absolute best thing you can do. It's where they want you. And as much as it feels a bit frustrating because we can't do anything else when we're sitting on the floor with our little ones, it's a really good place for you and for them for this stage of development.
Yeah, I think the sort of making sure there's enough tummy time sometimes becomes harder. I've found when they start sitting, just because they prefer that position, actually, they find it so frustrating to be back on their tummies, because at least sitting, they can now see everything and they can more easily reach the toys, whereas they just feel totally stuck before crawling to have to like get back on their stomachs. But I think what he's been doing now, which you also mentioned previously, was he'll sort of just flop onto his tummy anyway because he's reaching for something while he's sitting, and then he just goes forward and the legs get pushed out and then he's back on his tummy. So I guess they just naturally get where they need to be. Hey.
No, absolutely. He's doing it absolutely perfectly. And I can tell you, because I'm sure we'll chat again in a month's time, I bet you that he will be very close to crawling then. So it sounds like you're on a good trajectory.
Oh, goodness. Send luck.
Yes. Well, I mean, I've always said that for me, the toughest age of parenting is about as soon as they start crawling until 18 months, because they're just dangerous. You can't take your eyes off them. You can't sit down for 2 minutes. Everything is a hazard. So yeah, you are heading for that.
So long as we're well slept, I am fine with whatever comes during the day.
It's so true. Oh my gosh. That is the truest thing. So yeah, well, Nina, lovely to chat. Thank you for your time and for letting us have a little peek into Josh's world every month. We really appreciate it.
Oh, it's always so helpful for me, so thank you.
Pleasure.
Chat soon. Bye.
Thanks to everyone who joined us. We will see you the same time next week. Until then, download ParentSense app and take the guesswork out of parenting.